It is Tuesday, August 4th, and this is VOA's International Edition. I'm Sarah Williams in Washington. Coming up, U.S. Secretary of State John Kerry arrives in Kuala Lumpur for talks on the Pacific trade deal. Myanmar struggles with devastating floods.
Certainly over the weekend, the situation worsened when a cyclone came in from the Bay of Bengal, Cyclone Komet, which brought heavy winds and further rains to areas that were already inundated.
And singers Eminem and Gwen Stefani team up for a song in the new film Southpaw. It's all ahead. Visiting Singapore Tuesday, U.S. Secretary of State John Kerry appealed to the 11 other members of the Trans-Pacific Partnership Free Trade Negotiations to overcome the last remaining differences in their years-long talks. Mr. Kerry said good progress was made during the most recent round of talks last week in Hawaii, but a hoped-for breakthrough failed to materialize. In a comprehensive agreement designed to erase most tariffs and clarify trade rules, Monday, White House spokesman Josh Earnest insisted President Obama remains hopeful an agreement will be reached that meets his criteria.
And that criteria is specifically that it enhances the economic prospects of middle-class families here in the United States, but also enhances the national security interests of the United States around the globe. That's the kind of agreement that the president has directed his team to try to broker. And the president has indicated that he's not going to sign on to an agreement that falls short of that standard. So it's not particularly surprising to me that there might be some in other countries who are suggesting that the United States is not moving far enough in their direction. The good news is that there should be some common ground where we can reach an agreement that's in the best interest of consumers in another country, while at the same time being clearly in the best interest of the United States and our economy. And that's the common ground that they've been hard at work at trying to find for several years now.
The TPP is a key element of the Obama administration's rebalance to the Asia-Pacific region announced nearly 4 years ago. IHS Global Insight chief economist Rajiv Biswas in Singapore tells International Edition's Victor Beatty he believes time is rapidly running out for a successful conclusion to the talks, given Canada's elections in October, followed by the looming U.S. presidential election campaign season in 2016.
There may still be time for some, you know, final deal to be pulled together, but I think it would really need to be done in the next few weeks, or at least months anyway, so that the national parliaments of the TPP members can ratify the deal either by the end of this year or early next year. So that means there's a very narrow window. One of the sticking points in the current negotiation round was on dairy, where Canada really was holding out in terms of liberalization of its dairy sector, which seems to be its holy cow, if you like, that it doesn't really want to move substantially on that, particularly given they have their own elections coming up. So I think a lot of the negotiations are also getting stalled over every country's individual election cycle. There were a few other sticking points in relation to the autos deal between Japan and North America, and also in relation to biologics. But I think some of those may be more readily resolved than the dairy dispute. So the TPP negotiations are very, very close to a final deal. Some reports from ministers indicate 98% of issues have been resolved, so they're really tantalizingly close to getting a deal. And that's why it's so important to try to get that pushed through in the next few weeks and months, so that the whole TPP initiative doesn't get scuppered by the election campaigning cycle in the U.S.
Were you surprised that there was not a breakthrough in Hawaii?
I think it was clear that there would be difficulties in some areas, but there had been high hopes that a deal would be reached, or at least the broad framework of a deal. So it is disappointing, I think, for many of the countries that a deal was not able to be done. Certainly, I believe that the TPP does deliver positive benefits to the member countries, and therefore it is a disappointment that it didn't go through at this time, because that would have worked relatively well in terms of the political timetable in the U.S. But now, the longer it drags on, the more difficult it will be to get through the political cycle, given the upcoming elections.
Japan's economy minister suggested that there could be another round later this month.
The key now will be the Canadian elections, because one of the issues that held up the dairy deal was that the Canadian government was concerned about its farm lobby and how that would play out in the elections. So I don't think it'll be meaningful to have another round of talks until after the Canadian elections. So as soon as those are over, then there would be leeway. But the problem is that after the Canadian elections, it's not that long before the U.S. Election process gets underway. So it's a very narrow time frame that we're talking about. Certainly, a deal needs to be concluded by November this year, I would say. So the last chance would be at the APEC summit in Manila in November.
That's IHS Global Insight Chief Economist Rajiv Biswas. The talks involve 12 nations that comprise 40% of the world's economy. Well, joining me here in the studio is social media editor Andrew Palshevsky. So, Andrew, what's the reaction in social media about all this?
Well, the reaction is still on Cecil the Lion. Everyone's still talking about this lion that was unfortunately killed in Zimbabwe by this American dentist. But what's interesting is that the conversation's now shifted to a new person, Sabrina Corgatelli. She's known as the Idaho Huntress. And she's this woman who's been posting these pictures on her Facebook page of her with giraffes that she's killed, warthogs, wildebeest, saying that, "I'm not going to apologize for this." She said that, "I'm, you know, a hunter. This is my hobby." So she's been defending this. She's been getting a lot of criticism on social media for this. People saying she's cold-hearted. People saying that she doesn't understand what hunting really is. But she's saying it's a sport. She's saying it's, you know, she actually said she has a connection with the animal when she's hunting an animal, and that the animals are dangerous and they can kill her. So trying to make, you know, kind of reasoning for behind her hunting. We're going to be covering this today on our show, hashtag VOA. We're going to be talking about Cecil Lion. We're going to be talking about the big game hunting and how this has been brought into the spotlight. So we invite everybody to view that on voanews.com at 7:30 p.m. Harare time, 1:30 p.m. Eastern time here in the U.S. And you can find it on voanews.com later today after it airs. Switching gears, we have the unfortunate news about the demise of Hitchbot. Hitchbot was a creation of two Canadian professors. It's a robot with a bucket for a body. It has two kind of LED lights on its face, and they set it off in different countries to try to see if people, just out of the kindness of their hearts, could kind of work this robot along. So it's gone and made its way through Amsterdam, going through parts of Europe, and so they let it loose in the U.S. on July 17th. They left it on the side of a highway in the state of Massachusetts, and they had instructions on it that said, "Please, you know, take me, I'm the hitchhiking robot. Take me to where I need to be." Well, unfortunately, the robot ended up in Philadelphia, where it met its demise. There's surveillance video of the robot being kicked and broken by a vandal.
Oh.
So a lot of people on social media mourning this robot's death. It was actually very interesting because as the robot was making its way across the country, it would take pictures every 20 minutes and send them out on Instagram, Facebook, Twitter. So it really was a social media robot, kind of a social media experiment to see if people could push it across the country. So people very sad about that this morning. But the two creators, the two Canadian professors, said they won't press charges, and they said this may not be the last iteration of Hitchbot. There may be another one to come in the future.
Maybe the next one will have to have better security.
Yeah, and a stronger body, maybe something made out of titanium or something.
All right. Thanks, Andrew. That's social media editor Andrew Palshevsky. This is VOA.
Here's Science in a Minute.
As the old saying goes, what goes up must come down. And researchers say the land located beneath the Chesapeake Bay in the eastern United States is rapidly sinking, and that Washington, D.C. could drop 15 centimeters or more within the next century. Land dropping beneath the U.S. capital city could exacerbate a rise in sea level, which is forecasted due to melting ice sheets and climate change. Geologists have thought for decades that the land surrounding the Chesapeake Bay, once pushed upward by the mass of a prehistoric ice sheet, is now settling back down since the ice has long since melted. The researchers from the University of Vermont point out that their data indicates that the land around the Washington area is not sinking primarily because of human-related activities. I'm VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
This is International Edition on The Voice of America. I'm Sarah Williams. Coming up, we'll hear about the song in the new film, Southpaw. Authorities in Myanmar say at least 48 people are now dead after several days of flash flooding and landslides. The Ministry of Relief and Resettlement announced that about 200,000 residents in northern and western Myanmar have been affected by the disaster as the government, military, and relief organizations scramble to carry out rescue operations and provide aid. Myanmar opposition leader Aung San Suu Kyi visited one of the country's flood-afflicted areas on Monday. Patrick Fuller is a spokesman for the International Federation of the Red Cross. He spoke with me from Kuala Lumpur. At the moment, what kind of a situation is your organization are you looking at?
Well, the situation is certainly very serious. The Red Cross has been keeping a very close eye on the floods over the past couple of weeks, and certainly over the weekend, the situation worsened when the cyclone came in from the Bay of Bengal, Cyclone Comet, which brought heavy winds and further rains to areas that were already inundated. What we're most concerned about at the moment is actually accessing many of these areas, which remain cut off. So people have basically been without any outside help for, you know, a couple of weeks now. And the floodwaters are moving from northern Myanmar down into the south. So we're now seeing further flooding in previously unaffected areas.
What kind of infrastructure is there in Myanmar to cope with an event of this magnitude?
Well, the Red Cross has disaster preparedness stocks in many of its regional offices and warehouses, and these have all pretty much been distributed, actually. But the infrastructure is certainly a challenge. A lot of roads are cut off. There have been a lot of landslides, so we simply can't get through to some of these places. And, yeah, it's very difficult, and it's going to take time to actually reach some of these places.
What about a regional coordination from the sort of greater Southeast Asia area? Are organizations able to get in there or other governments?
Well, the government has declared a number of areas like Chin State and Sagaing and Magway region and Rakhine State, what they call natural disaster zones. And I believe the government today issued an appeal for international assistance. So the Red Cross, for example, we have a long-standing presence in Myanmar. We work with the Myanmar Red Cross. But we will be looking at launching an international appeal in the coming days to further resource the response.
And I suppose these things, of course, take time as well.
Yes, indeed. If you look at the case of other similar disasters in the region, I mean, we're now looking at a situation where we have floods in Bangladesh, in India, and also in Vietnam as well. So the monsoon has really impacted Southeast Asia in a big way. And inevitably, in these situations, the biggest challenge is actually getting to these affected communities while the floods are still on the ground. Once the floods subsided, we also face a number of challenges because massive cleanup operations, you also have a lot of health-related issues, and people have lost, you know, personal possessions, they've lost properties, they've lost livestock. So, you know, we're talking about communities which are, you know, close to, I suppose, the poverty line, and they're going to need some kind of support in their recovery.
All right. Thank you very much for speaking with me today.
Thank you.
That's Patrick Fuller, spokesman for the International Federation of the Red Cross. The Philippines says it will back calls by the United States for a series of measures aimed at reducing tensions in the South China Sea during a regional security forum in Kuala Lumpur on Wednesday. Washington wants countries to stop building artificial islands and carrying out military activities. From Manila, Simone Orendine reports.
The Philippines is expected to raise the issue of China's activities in the South China Sea during meetings of the 10-member Association of Southeast Asian Nations this week. Foreign Affairs Secretary Albert Del Rosario released a statement Tuesday saying that his country would also endorse a U.S. call for stopping all work on disputed outcroppings and any military activities. Del Rosario says As a means of de-escalating tensions in the region, the Philippines fully supports and will proactively promote the call of the United States on the three halts: a halt in reclamation, halt in construction, and a halt in aggressive actions that could further heighten tensions. However, he says the Philippines backs those measures only if other claimants, including China, do the same. And he says this does not mean that China's island construction on at least seven outcroppings is legitimate. In recent months, the U.S. has been raising concerns over China's project to convert reefs and shoals in the Spratlys into man-made islands. Carl Baker is Programs Director at the Pacific Forum of the Washington-based Center for Strategic and International Studies.
This has been the American position for, almost 2 years now, saying that everyone should stop developing their particular areas that they hold. But everybody knows that this is really directed at China.
China insists that ASEAN forums are not the place to raise these territorial disputes. Beijing claims nearly the entire South China Sea, while the Philippines, Vietnam, Malaysia, Brunei, and Taiwan also have overlapping claims. The Philippines has filed a case with the Permanent Court of Arbitration to question what it calls China's excessive claims in the sea. China rejects the case and is not participating. Baker does not foresee any change in the U.S. position, and nor does he see a shift in China's stance, especially since it already built the islands. He predicts that the standoff will inhibit security cooperation in Southeast Asia. On Monday in Singapore, China's Foreign Minister Wang Yi downplayed the concerns over Beijing's island building, which has rapidly built airstrips and buildings on top of what were, until recently, mostly submerged rocks and reefs. He says, at the moment, the general situation in the South China Sea is stable, and China is steadfastly committed to working with the parties to maintain the situation, which has not come easily. And we will never allow any country to destabilize the South China Sea. Wang made a pitch for peacefully resolving the disputes through consultations and negotiations among what he called five commitment points of China regarding the contested sea. Simone Orendain for VOA News, Manila.
This is VOA.
Hashtag VOA. It's a weekly show, Tuesdays at 1730 UTC, where we bring you the top topics of the week. But the show lives on social media every day with your daily video shorts, What's Trending Wednesday, and the Friday Fast Five. Subscribe to the show at YouTube. You can find us at hashtag VOA. You can reach me at Twitter, at Perry Cal, or talk to the show anytime. Please don't forget to like us on Facebook. We like to be liked. We love to be seen. And you can reach us anytime.
Hi, my name's Larry London. Welcome to Border Crossings, your request and dedication program here at the Voice of America. 1500 Universal, Monday through Friday, we're there for an hour playing your favorite music. You can send an email in and request your favorite songs by your favorite artists. You can also phone in as well. We have great contests and surprise guests from time to time. Border Crossings, every single day during the week at 1500 Universal, here on the Voice of America.
This is International Edition. Rapper Eminem teams with No Doubt's Gwen Stefani for a new song from the boxing film Southpaw. International Edition's David Byrd talked with Border Crossing's host Larry London about Kings Never Die.
You might be a fan of his from The Slim Shady or other songs that he's put on the radio, but Eminem has got a new one out, and he teams up with Gwen Stefani from No Doubt for Kings Never Die. Larry, this is from the soundtrack for the new 50 Cent-produced movie, Southpaw, right?
That's right. It's one of those boxing films. I saw the movie, and it ain't no Rocky, that's for sure.
Well, it's Jake Gyllenhaal, first of all.
Jake Gyllenhaal is in the film. And by the way, Eminem was up for the same role, but he turned it down. In fact, he was negotiating to play the lead role as the boxer, whose name is Billy Hope in the film. But he said, no, eventually deciding against it. So, yes, Jake Gyllenhaal, Rachel McAdams, 50 Cent, who's in the film.
And this song is it's kind of one of those angry rap anthem, Get Your Blood Up. It'd be great to work out to. It'd be a great workout song.
Eminem's got three songs on the soundtrack. And by the way, as a side note, this film was scored by James Horner, who passed away in June.
Right, the guy who did Titanic.
That's right. This is his last film that he put music in. And the end, they say in memory of James Horner.
I can hear the drummer drumming. In the trumpet, someone's trying to summon someone. I know something's coming. But I'm running from it, to be standing at the summit and plummet. How come it wasn't what I thought it was? Was it too good to be true? Have nothing, get it all, but too much of it, then lose it again. Did I swallow hallucinogens? Cause if not, where the hell did it go? Cause here I sit in Lucifer's den by the touch of and just choosing to sin. Even if it means I'm selling my soul just to be the undisputed again. Do whatever.
This particular song that Eminem and Gwen Stefani perform doesn't appear until you're two-thirds of the way through the film. It's right near the end with the big fight, which I'm not going to reveal too much about, but the big fight that comes at the end. And you hear this song playing. And when you hear it in the film, you don't really hear much Gwen Stefani. But when you hear the song itself, she's featured in the song. You can tell it's her.
Now, this is not a big departure for Eminem because he's, you know, kind of in your face. But Gwen Stefani is more kind of mellow type thing. So this is a little... Is she branching out with this tune?
Well, I can't necessarily say that, but she has been working on a new solo album. She's slow on the project. She's been working with Pharrell. We don't have a date. We don't have a title. We know very little about it. I know that she's doing some shows with No Doubt, and she's also going to be coaching on The Voice, replacing Christina Aguilera here in the U.S.
Okay, well, that's VOA's Larry London. You can hit him up on Twitter. That's at VOA underscore music. You can also watch his show, which is Border Crossings. That's on our website, www.voanews.com. If you want to send us a tweet, we're at VOA underscore IE. And if you want to send one to me, I'm at David underscore D Bird.
That is music from Gwen Stefani and Eminem, Kings Never Die, from the movie Southpaw. And that's our show. Please visit our website at voanews.com for more information. I'm Sarah Williams. Thanks very much for joining us.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
500 of sub-Saharan Africa's most promising young leaders have gathered here in Washington to meet with President Barack Obama and leading U.S. entrepreneurs, government officials, and civil society representatives. The three-day summit, August 3rd, 4th, and 5th, will do more than that, however. It will also underscore our nation's commitment to Africa's people, democracy, and governance, and highlight our commitment to addressing issues that affect us all. Increased engagement with the nations of Africa is a high priority of U.S. foreign policy. President Obama has emphasized how important this relationship is, beginning with his traveling to Ghana soon after taking office in 2009. The presidential summit follows 6 weeks of academic study and leadership training for the 500 fellows at 20 institutions of higher education across the United States as part of the Mandela Washington Fellowship. The event will also feature a town hall with President Obama, a plenary session with members of Congress, and breakout discussions with leaders in business, government, international development, and non-governmental organizations. Forging stronger personal connections among these young leaders advances America's and Africa's many, many shared priorities. It also fosters further future engagement and deepens the partnership between the American and African peoples as we both pursue a better future for us all.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government. For a transcript of this and other VOA editorials, or to receive editorials by email, visit the VOA Editorials Internet homepage at www.voanews.com/editorials.